All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves tonight in Parshas Beshalach. Our share this evening is sponsored by the Lustin family in the Zuchus of Refuah Shlema from Mrs. Rosalie Rappaport. Reza Liba Bas Basya. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she will have a complete and enduring refuah. Thank you for this sponsorship. Okay, so let's begin. So I want to draw your attention. There's a lot going on in Parshas Beshalach. And again, a lot going on with the departure of Klal Yisrael after 210 years of servitude, the dramatic episode at Yamsuf, and of course, again, a variety of additional episodes after that. I want to draw your attention actually to the end of the Parsha. The end of the Parsha is the dramatic war with Amalek. So the Torah says, let's take a look at number one. Vayavo Amalek vayilachim im Yisrael berefidim. So Klal Yisrael comes along and they fight with Amalek in Refidim. Vayomer Moshe Yoshua. Moshe says to Yoshua, Bechar lanu anoshim, choose for us men, v'tzehi lochim ba'amalek, and go out and fight Amalek, machar, tomorrow, v'anochi nitzav arosh ha'giva, tomorrow I'll go ahead and I'll find myself on the top of the mountain, and the staff of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be in my hand. So Yoshua followed Moshe Rabbeinu's instructions. He goes out, so Yoshua gathers the army, Yoshua mobilizes the forces, they go out to war against Amalek. Moshe Rabbeinu goes on the mountaintop. Not just Moshe, Moshe, Aaron, and Hur all go up on the top of the mountain. V'hayo, kasher yore Moshe yadov v'gavar Yisrael. So when Moshe Rabbeinu would lift up his hands, the Jewish people would be successful. V'chasher yaniach yadov v'gavar Amalek. And ultimately, again, when he would lower his hands, so Amalek would win. Raise his hands, Klal Yisrael wins. Lowers his hands, Amalek wins. Pasuk Yud Beis, number 1, verse 12. V'yidei Moshe kvedim. Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were very heavy. V'yikhu even v'yasimu tachtov. They brought a stone, placed it underneath him. And he sat on the stone. Aaron and Hur both helped to prop up Moshe Rabbeinu's hand. One person on each side. He was with his hands
in faith,
which means Moshe Rabbeinu kept his hands raised up until the evening. And Yoshua, successful in the battle, weakens Amalek with his sword. So again, it's a dramatic story on many different levels. It's dramatic because, number one, Amalek, as Rashi points out, is the first nation to start up with Klal Yisrael, which, if you think about it again, is such a dramatically crazy idea. Klal Yisrael had just brought down the mightiest empire on the face of the earth, and yet Amalek is still coming to do war. So many dramatic pieces. What I'd like to draw your attention to tonight, that we're going to focus on in the shiur this evening, is the underlined phrase, V'idei Moshe Kvedim. Moshe Rabbeinu's arms were heavy. His hands were heavy. So generally when we see this, so how do we understand this pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu's, or this phrase, Moshe Rabbeinu's hands are heavy? Meaning a simple idea. If you try to hold your hands up for any amount of time, your hands become heavy. Meaning, the truth is, Eschatani Maskir, I never really attributed any deeper meaning to this particular phrase, because Torah is just telling me a simple fact, trying to tell me that Moshe Rabbeinu is fatigued. Moshe Rabbeinu is tired. He's standing on the mountaintop the entire day, keeping his hands raised. He's tired. The problem is, if that's all the Torah is teaching me, that at the end of the day he's tired, then why the need to include this in the parasha? Meaning, remember, we say this every single week, every single word, every single letter, every single phrase included in the Torah is overflowing with meaning and messages. So the Torah HaKadosh is going out of its way to tell me that Moshe Rabbeinu's hands are heavy. This is much more than just a simple physiological statement of fatigue. That Moshe Rabbeinu is holding his hands up, and you hold your hands up for a long time, you get tired. In fact, take a look at number two. The Mechilta says the following. The Mechilta, the Medrash, writes, V'idei Moshe Kvedim. And the Mechilta here makes an interesting statement. He says, V'idei Moshe Kvedim, Yakru Yadav Shel Moshe Ba'osasha. Moshe Rabbeinu's arms became heavy in that moment. Ke'adam Shetiluyin Bo Shnei Kademayim. How would you translate that? Ke'adam Shetiluyin Bo Shnei Kademayim. Like a person holding two buckets of water. Okay. What is the mechilta? Meaning, again, what is the mechilta coming to add? What is it coming to add? What he's coming to add is as follows. Moshe Rabbeinu's arms are heavy because he's holding something. He's holding something. It's not just the pshat that his arms are tired because he's keeping them raised. No, that's not the problem. Moshe Rabbeinu's arms are heavy, like a person carrying two filled buckets of water. Moshe Rabbeinu is carrying something in his arms. Moshe Rabbeinu is shouldering some type of weight. That is what's causing the fatigue. That's what's causing the difficulty. That's what's weighing him down. And of course the question becomes, Sanu, what is Moshe Rabbeinu carrying? What is it that is weighing Moshe Rabbeinu down? What is it that's holding, that's literally bringing his hands down? So the Mefarshim here go in a variety of different directions. If you take a look at the Al Shech number 3, the Al Shech writes, Yidei Moshe Shteim Kvedim, Vo Sha'al Ha'idar Zichus Yisrael, Hayasham Kavdus or Kvedus Biyadayim. The Al Shech says that he actually phrases it in a very beautiful way. It was because of the lack of merits for Klal Yisrael. So today we would say this, that Klal Yisrael at this moment was piety challenged. Right? What does it mean, piety challenged? Meaning they committed an Avera. What did Klal Yisrael do just in the Pesukim before? And so skip for a moment to number 4. Remember again, the story of our ancestors, no matter how many times you learn it, to be honest, it's just quite shocking. We come out of Mitzrayim where we saw the Makos. We're taken out of 210 years of servitude. We come through the sea. Chesh Baruch Hu, we see the Rosh Hashanah destroy the entire Egyptian army. We're now, Baruch Hashem, fabulously wealthy because we came out with the wealth of the Egyptians, plus we got to keep any of the riches, the treasure that washed up on the shore of the Yam Suf. We have everything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us that He's going to provide us with man, our daily bread from the heavens. He told us He's going to take care of us ultimately again with the fire. He's going to take care of us with the cloud. All is good. All is good. And yet again, look at number 4. Vayikra Shem HaMoko Maso Moriva Al Riv Bnei Yisrael Va'al Naso Sam Es Hashem Lemar Hayesh Hashem Bikir Beinu Em Ayin. You want to hear the chutzpah? The chutzpah is, after all of this, Klal Yisrael comes to Moshe Rabbeinu with a very simple question. Is God really with us? You know, we feel that God is not really with us. We feel that He's not attentive enough to us. We feel that He doesn't spend enough time with us. Can you imagine this? After everything that just happened, after everything. So first of all, just as an aside, it's an incredibly dramatic lesson. Meaning, these stories are dramatic. Why? So the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, I didn't put this on the sheet, this is bonus material. Right? So the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh brings down, he says, that when Klal Yisrael came to Mara, they came, that was the first time they came to Mara. So the Torah says, "V'lo yochlu lishtos ha'samayim ki marim heim," right? Because they could not drink the waters. They could not drink the water because they were bitter. Now the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh points out, he says that at the end of the day, it should have said ki marim or ki mar haya. They couldn't drink the water for it was bitter. Instead, it says they couldn't drink the water for they were bitter. The Baal Shem Tov says the bitterness is not about the water. The bitterness is about the people. The problem with Klal Yisrael is they chose to see life through a particular lens of negativity. There are some people where something is always wrong. Now the truth is, if we're honest, something is always wrong. Right? In life, there is always something in a state of disrepair. That's just, it's true within ourselves, it's true within our circumstances, it's true within our families, it's true in everything in life. There is no perfection in this world, and as such, there is always an element of disrepair. The shaila is, the question becomes, what do you choose to focus on? Do you choose to focus on those pieces that are broken? Do you choose to focus on those pieces that are in a state of disrepair? Or do you choose to focus on all of the things that are good, on all of the beautiful things? The problem of Klal Yisrael was, if you look at Klal Yisrael's complaints in the desert, the truth is, most of them are, I'll call it, legitimate. What do I mean by that? That they're saying things that are rooted in reality. When they get nervous about the mud, they get nervous about the water, they get nervous about the enemies. These are legitimate concerns. The problem is that they allowed these things that were quote-unquote broken in their eyes to determine the totality of their experiential reality. So when they go ahead and they're a little bit nervous about the water, or they're a little bit nervous about the mud, oh, everything's terrible, the sky's falling, everything's terrible, where's God? He left us, He abandoned us. Calm down. That's not what's happening over here. You have a challenge. you have an issue, let's work through it. The sky is not falling, Baruch Hashem. All is good, all is okay. We could work through this issue and come to a type of solution. The Al-Sheikh points out that in the Pasuk before the war with Amalek, Klal Yisrael says, you know, Ribono Shel Olam, Moshe, the water was bitter. The water was very bitter. And this man, it's not dependable, you can't put away leftovers, there's nothing to put in the cupboard. Is God really with us? Is God really with us? That's the question you're asking? That's the difficulty you're raising? Be honest. You want to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it makes me very on edge to not have food in the cupboard. We're Jewish. It makes me very uncomfortable to not have the third refrigerator stocked, right? It makes me very uncomfortable to know that I have what I have for today. Because remember, again, if you think about it, the man from a Jewish, we'll call it culinary or gastrointestinal experience was very anxiety provoking because you only had enough for the day. Meaning you went to sleep and there was nothing in the house. There was nothing in the house, which meant that when you went to sleep and you tucked your kids into bed, so you had to believe that the next morning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to provide food at your doorstep. That's anxiety provoking. It is anxiety provoking. Even though the slaves, you know, they weren't having 7-course meals, but at the end of the day, Bepashtos, so we assumed that they had food in their house. They had food in their house. So this is the story of the Jewish people over and over and over. It's the story of the human condition, not the food piece, but the story of the Jewish people is, you know, when you're not honest about what's really bothering you, and you go ahead and you end up making issues much bigger than they are. All of Klal Yisrael's worries were legitimate worries. The problem is they amplified them into much bigger issues that then snowballed into the worst and most egregious offenses against God and against Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Al-Sheikh is pointing out that right before the war with Amalek, so what happens? Klal Yisrael says to Moshe, is God with us? So the Al-Sheikh says, at that point in time, Klal Yisrael had lost their spiritual standing as a result of the ridiculous chutzpah of asking if God was with them. Therefore, back to number 3, Moshe Rabbeinu's hands are heavy. Why? Sha'ala eider zechus Yisrael, hayasham kvedos v'yadayim. Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were supposed to be extended to the heavens, which were supposed to, remember, it's not, this is the Gemara says, it's not Moshe Rabbeinu's hands that determine the success or failure at war. It was Moshe Rabbeinu's hands which were channeling the thoughts, the hearts, and the souls of Klal Yisrael up to the heavens. The problem is because of Klal Yisrael's sinful behavior, just the pasuk earlier, their sins weighed down Moshe's hands. So the Mechilta's image of Moshe Rabbeinu being like a person who's carrying a water-filled bucket with each hand, what's in those buckets? Those buckets are filled with the sins of Klal Yisrael. It was the negative spiritual baggage of the Jewish people which was weighing down the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Mechilta however gives another example, or another interpretation. Look at number 5. Siri says something amazing. So the Mechilta now quotes a second approach, a second reason as to why Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were heavy. Listen to this. Mikan shemirashlin lidvar mitzvah. So the Mechilta here says something which is quite amazing. What do we learn from here? We learn from here, she'in merashlin lidvar mitzvah. Merashlin dvar mitzvah, see, there's not a good English word for it, because merashlin sometimes we would translate as lazy, but the truth is, it probably is a better statement as a lackadaisical approach. Not lazy, but a lackadaisical or laid back approach to a mitzvah. From here we learn that you can't be laid back or lackadaisical in your approach to mitzvahs. Why? She'ilu amar la Moshe li Yoshua, bechar lanu anoshim miyad, lo bo lidei tsarahu, ela amar limachar. So the Mechilta says something amazing. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Yoshua. And what does he say to Yoshua? Yoshua, Bechar lanu anoshim, might choose men for the army, v'tzei hilochim ba'amolek machar. Machar, go and fight Amalek tomorrow. Why tomorrow? Why not today? They're attacking us. Why are you deflecting this until tomorrow? So the Mechilta says, Moshe Rabbeinu, because Nisrashel took a more quote-unquote lackadaisical or laid-back approach, didn't engage war today. Instead, tells Yoshua, We'll do it tomorrow. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu's hands, or his arms, became heavy. The heaviness is almost a metaphor for what? I feel very reticent to use this word by Moshe Rabbeinu, but we'll use it, the laziness. That Moshe Rabbeinu's heaviness of his hands is almost reflective of the heaviness of his movement. He didn't spring into action as quickly as he should have. He didn't react as quickly as he should have. Now again, you could say maybe it takes time to gather the army, it takes time for preparations. I'm sure there's a million, but nevertheless, the Mechilta thought of that also. But yet the Mechilta still feels that Moshe Rabbeinu was heavy, was slow, was perhaps a bit too laid back in mobilizing the forces to go out to war, and as such, his arms become heavy. Now watch this. This Mechilta opens up a different approach. If you take a look at number 7, 6 and 7, 6 is the Targum Yonasan. Yonasan ben Uziel, remember again, was the primary disciple of Hillel. You know, the Gemara says that Hillel had many disciples. Who was at the top of the class? Top of the class was Yonasan ben Uziel. Who was on the bottom of the class? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So first of all, can you imagine that class? Right? So Yonasan ben Uziel is at the top of the class. The Gemara says, how holy was Yonasan ben Uziel? So the Gemara says that when Yonasan ben Uziel would learn Torah, that if a bird would fly overhead, it would be incinerated because of the fire of holiness that came up from him. Remember again, and who's the low guy on the totem pole? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, one could honestly say it's not our topic for tonight. We are here today. We are here today in very large part due to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one who literally maintained the optimism and hope of Klal Yisrael in the aftermath of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was responsible for all the takanos we have, Zecher, the Churban Zecher, the Mikdash. So much of our contemporary Judaic practice is rooted in takanos of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And he was the youngest, right? He was the low guy on the totem pole in Hillel Shir. Quite dramatic. So Yonasan ben Uziel wrote a Perush on Chumash. He wrote it in Aramaic, but it's not a translation, it's a Perush. So we're going to skip 6 to go to number 7. 7 is just the Hebraicized form of that Aramaic interpretation, just a little bit easier for us to learn. So the Yonasan ben Uziel says the following, "Bidei Moshe hayu kvedim ba'avur she'ikev milchama lamachar." Same idea. Yonasan ben Uziel says the Mechilta. Why are Moshe Rabbeinu's hands heavy? Because he delayed going out to war until tomorrow. Below his daris bayomahu legu'ulasam shal Yisrael. Moshe, you have an opportunity to redeem the Jewish people from their enemies. You don't wait until tomorrow. You do that today. Below haya yachal zachem. So Yonasan ben Uziel seems to echo the same idea as the Mechilta. Why are Moshe Rabbeinu's hands heavy? The heaviness seems to be a manifestation of the heaviness in which he reacted. He didn't spring into action. He took his time. We'll get to it tomorrow. There was a slowness. There was a lackadaisicalness. I'm not going to use the word laziness. There was a heaviness in his reaction, and therefore his hands become heavy. Take a look at 8. Rashi says a little bit differently. Rashi says over here, same motif, but a different application. Videi Moshe Kvedim, Rashi says number 8. Bishvil shenis atzel b'mitzvah, umana acher tachtov. Oh, Rashi says, now Rashi at first glance seems to be saying the same thing as the Mechilta, same thing as Yonasan ben Uziel. This Nisatzel, he uses a different word, not Nisrashel, he uses Nisatzel. Now Nisatzel literally sounds like what? Right? Like laziness. So again, we're going to define that term in just a little bit. But look what Rashi says. Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake. What was his mistake? Shenisatzel b'mitzvah. He was perhaps too laid back, too, we'll use lackadaisical again, in the mitzvah. Umana acher tachtov. What was Moshe's mistake? You see, as opposed to the Mechilta and the Targum Yonasan, who say that Moshe's mistake was one word, which was machar. We'll get to this tomorrow. Rashi says no. His mistake was he outsourced. His mistake was he delegated. He says to Yoshua, Yoshua, bechar lanu anoshim, go assemble the army. No, Moshe. You handle this yourself. You do not outsource this. You do not delegate this. You handle this yourself. So what's happening over here? So again, I just want to point out, Rashi, the Targum Yonasan, and the Mechilta seem to all be going on the same basic idea that the heaviness of Moshe Rabbeinu's arms, the heaviness of his hands, is a manifestation of the slowness or heaviness with which he prepared for this battle. What's the slowness or the heaviness? According to the Mechilta Targum Yonasan, is that it should have been done today, but instead he said, we'll do it tomorrow. According to Rashi, he outsourced it to Yoshua. You should have led the army yourself. You should have gone out to battle yourself. But instead, you handed it off to Yoshua. So this raises an interesting question. We're just going to go on a tangent. Why does he outsource it to Yoshua? Why doesn't Moshe Rabbeinu lead the army himself? So there's a couple of answers. If you look at number 9, so Rashi says over here, Vayomer Moshe, excuse me, the Medrash says, Vayomer Moshe Yoshua, Bechar Lon Anashim, Lama Li Yoshua. So this is amazing. So the Medrash says, Moshe has a very good reason. Now this Medrash is one of these fascinating Midrashim about that Moshe Rabbeinu already has this foreboding sense that what? He's not taking the Jews into Eretz Yisrael. See, we often assume that the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did not take the Jews into Eretz Yisrael, into Canaan, is because of the episode with the rock. But the truth is, when one explores much of rabbinic literature, it becomes clear that Moshe Rabbeinu was never going to be the leader who was going to take the people into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was the leader from Mitzrayim to the Midbar. Yoshua was going to take them in. So the Medrash says over here that Moshe Rabbeinu already knows that Yoshua is going to take them in. Because Yoshua is going to take them in, Yoshua is going to have to fight battles. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu sees this as an opportunity for Shimush, an opportunity for training Yoshua. You take the army out. Because you, I'm the manhig, I'm the leader, I'm the Navi, I'm the Melech. You, Yoshua, are going to be the leader of the army. You are going to be the one who leads the conquest of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, again, now is the time to be able to begin your training, lead the army out to war against Amalek. Number 10, Vichiskuni says, a different reason. Anochi nitzav arosh agiva. So remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yoshua, you're going to take the army out, and where am I going to go? I'm going to go to the top of the mountain. I'll go to the top of the mountain. Okay, that's a nice job, right? You take the army out, I'll go to the top of the mountain. What's the pshat? So the Chizkuni says, why? Kedei shiiruni anshe achayil, losse slave lechazek es libam, vikras hamilchama. So what happens? Moshe says, listen, Yoshua, we have different roles. You see, you lead the army out. If I go to the top of the mountain, and during battle the people see me, their ability to look upon me and see me davening on their behalf could inspire them with the necessary confidence to be successful in battle. Listen to this. So the Chizkuni says, because this is often what happened in war, echad mi giboreim omid b'makom gavoa, v'ocheiz degel biyado, l'fisha kol ha'anashim ha'yotzim imo l'mochama, nosim v'nosnim eineyem l'degel, kol zman shu omid b'ma'amado, Nosnim lev lechazek likras hamilchama. Uksha degel namuch v'shafel kisvurim shemes sar shelohem v'nosim. So the Chizkuni says, in ancient times, what would happen? The army would go out to battle, but they would leave one of the valiant men on the hilltop waving the flag. And as long as the soldier on the top of the mountain was waving the flag, that gave the army the confidence to continue to fight. The flag is still being waved. Unfortunately, if the flag stopped being waved, then that would show that this powerful soldier was killed and people would flee. Therefore, says the Chizkuni, Moshe Rabbeinu goes on the top of the mountain in order to mechazek klal Yisrael, Yoshua. I can give them chizuk that you cannot. You lead them out to battle. I'll stay on the mountain. Number 11, the Aruch Chaim says, Aruch Chaim uses a different approach, which you don't have to get into now. But here's the problem. These are all interesting interpretations. But here's the problem. Take a look at number 12. Fast forwarding a little bit to Sefer Bamidbar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu now tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, this is after the episode with the rock. You're not going into Eretz Yisrael. You're not going into Eretz Yisrael. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Look at number 12. Fayor Moshe Hashem. Yifkot Hashem Elokei Arucha Uslecho Basar Ish Ala Ida. Ribono Shel Olam, what I'm asking of you is to appoint the right kind of man as a leader. This was the selflessness of Moshe Rabbeinu. Here, the Ribbono Shel Olam tells him, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. And what does he say? What does he say? Please appoint a good leader. See, that's what selfless dedication means. Selfless dedication means your entirety is devoted to the benefit of the collective. So therefore, even if your own personal agenda does not actualize, as the most important thing is that the collective agenda, the national agenda, moves forward. Moshe is not going into Eretz Yisrael. Nebuch, I guarantee you, it caused him many sleepless and tear-filled nights. But at the end of the day, Ribono Shel Olam, you need to appoint a good leader. So what are the qualifications of a good leader? So listen to this. Asher yetzei lifneihem, v'asher yavo lifneihem, v'asher yotzieim, v'asher yevieim. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, what is the number one quality of a good leader who will go forth before them, come before them, lead them out, and bring them in? In other words, what's a leader? A leader is someone who says, follow me. A leader is someone not who gives instructions from a faraway safe distance, but the leader is the one who brings the army into battle, and the leader is the one who brings the army home from battle. This, Moshe Rabbeinu says, is the hallmark of a committed, devoted leader. These are Moshe Rabbeinu's own words. So how dramatically ironic it is that in the first battle of Klal Yisrael, because we're not counting Egypt as a battle, the first battle of Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yoshua, you go. You go. You lead the army, I'll daven for the people. You lead the army, I'll stay on the hilltop. Which just leads us wondering, what's happening over here? What is it that is unfolding? What is it indeed that's unfolding that Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately is sending Yoshua out, not leaving the army out, when Moshe Rabbeinu himself, when speaking about the qualifications of a proper leader for Klal Yisrael, says, qualification number one is, you lead the army out, you lead the army back in. Why doesn't Moshe Rabbeinu follow his own advice here? So look at this. Look at number 13. And this will bring it all together. So this is from the Lubavitch Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, from his Likutei Sichos. So this is, the Rebbe makes an amazing observation. 13 Aleph. Habitui Nisrashel, mitayer yachas klali shal adam, lemeshimo sha'alov levatzea, hu eino miyaches aylehen esachashivos haru'uya. Lachain, hu eino mevatze osan miyad kishadaver nidrash mimeno. So the Rebbe points out that there are two different words that we often translate the same way. Nisrashel and Nisatzel. We've seen both of those words used. So often we translate them both as laziness or lackadaisical, laid-back attitude. But the Rebbe says they mean different things. The word Nisrashel, the Rebbe says, means that a person ultimately, again, has something to do, has a particular task, but doesn't feel that that task is important. And because he doesn't feel that that task is important enough, therefore he does not spring into action. That's Nisrashel. I am laid back, lackadaisical, heavy in the execution of the task, for a simple reason. I don't feel it's important. Or I don't feel something, or we could rephrase it differently. I don't feel it's important right now. It might be important later on. It might be important at some point. I don't feel it's important right now. That's Nisrashel. What's Nisatzel? Paragraph Aleph, three lines in. Habitui Nisatzel u'umazos, mitayer hisnagus shel adam biyachas lepu'ula misuyemes, hanovas misibak shur lepu'ula zu, v'lo yachas klali ala adam lemeshimus hamuteles alav. So again, so the Rebbe says something amazing. He says, let me say it a little bit differently. He says, Nisrashel is more like a life attitude. A life attitude. That in general, a person takes a lackadaisical or laid-back approach to things they have to do, right? There are some people who just, nothing is urgent. We're often jealous of those people. They seem much happier and much more at peace, much less stress and anxiety. But nothing is ever urgent. Nothing is ever, they also don't usually accomplish all that much. But yeah, nothing is ever urgent. Nothing is ever time-sensitive. I'll get to it. That's Nisrashel. Nisatzel means that I am not acting in a diligent or alacritous way. I don't have those reasons, but there's a reason. There's a reason. It's not because I don't care. It's not because I'm apathetic. It's not because I'm laid back. There's a reason why I'm not springing into action for this. Meaning, my inaction or my delay of act or my delayed action is deliberate. Now that sounds strange, right? My delayed action is deliberate. I'm purposely not springing into action. So what's happening over here? Now remember, what the Rebbe is commenting on over here is Rashi. If you look back in number 8, Rashi uses the lashon of nisatzel. He doesn't say nisrashel. The word nisrashel means I generally have a laid back attitude to life. Right? I'm calm, right? I don't get excited. Nothing's really an emergency. I'm laid back when it comes to life. That's nisrashel. Rashi uses the word bishvil shenis atzel. Moshe Rabbeinu is not laid back. Moshe Rabbeinu is not a chilled out individual. Moshe Rabbeinu always springs into immediate and decisive action. Yet over here, nisatzel, there was a reason why he delayed. There was a reason why he outsourced. There was a reason why he didn't spring into action. Turn the page. Paragraph base. So the Rebbe goes on, he says, Ubin Yaneinu, Rashi Eino Kosev, Shemosh Rabbeinu, Hisrashel Chalilo. It doesn't say that Moshe Rabbeinu was Hisrashel, which means just laid back, a general laid back attitude. Elo, Nisatzel B'mitzvah Kilomar, Moshe Shakel B'daito, Vehichlit, Shelo Lotzis Nimucha Ma'atzmo. So says about something amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, his first reaction was to lead the army out to war. Moshe Rabbeinu was a very hands-on leader. My first reaction is to lead the army out into war. But then he thought about it. He took a step back. He analyzed, he assessed, and he decided not to lead the army out to war. V'hadavar nechshav lo le'atzlos. That's called, the Rebbe says, atzlos. Why? Mikaven shel amito shel davar hayalav latzeis l'mochama limro shikul meila. See, Rashi says Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake. But lest you think that Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake is because of a general laid-back attitude to life, a general lackadaisical kite to life, that's not the case. This wasn't nisrashel, this was nisatzel. Moshe Rabbeinu chose not to do this himself, but it was a calculated, deliberate decision. Now Rashi says it was the wrong decision. He should have taken the army out himself. He should have led the army into war. But it was not because of just a general inaction. It was a deliberate inaction. What's going on over here? Paragraph Gimel. Be'er HaDvarim. Listen to what the Rebbe says. Hasiba lekach shemoshe Rabbeinu lo yotze ba'atzel l'mechama haisa. The reason that Moshe Rabbeinu did not lead the army into war was because bepashtus biglal gilo. So this is amazing. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu lead the army into war? Why not? Because of his age. Now, what does that mean? Moshe haya ba'osa shah ben shmonim shana. Moshe Rabbeinu, again, was 80 years old at this time. Actually, he was above 80 years old. He sees the sneh, really, again, the Kadosh Baruch Hu appears to him by the burning bush already when he was 80. So he was 80 plus. Harbei ma'avar ligvula elyon shel gil yotzei tzava. Remember, the Torah speaks about the standing army of the Jewish people. What's the age? What's the age spectrum for the army? 20 to 60. Those are the ages of the army. Younger than 20, you can't enlist. Older than 60, you are automatically retired. V'lachin, savar Moshe, shemutov shuhu atzmo, lo yetzei l'melchama hagashmis. So Moshe makes a deliberate decision. What's his deliberate decision? I'm 80 years old. So Moshe Rabbeinu knows the Torah, or at least understands conceptually the precepts, and says, you know what? This is not my role. My role is to be a leader, but not in this capacity. I'm too old. I'm aged out. Ela Yisrakis b'siyu haruchani l'mocham b'amtzos ha'tfila b'rosh ha'giva. So what I can do is, I can't lead the army into war, but what I can do is daven on their behalf. So Yoshua, you go ahead and lead the army into battle, I'll daven for them on the hilltop. That's why Rashi uses the lashon of nisatzel. Moshe Rabbeinu is deliberately inactive. Not inactive. He doesn't delegate because he's laid back. He doesn't delegate chas v'shalom because he doesn't care. He delegates in his inaction is deliberate. I'm 80 years old. I'm too old to go out to battle. Paragraph Dalet. So the truth is, I mean, it sounds like a pretty good svara. It sounds like a pretty good logic. It sounds like a pretty good plan. Yoshua, the young man, will go out and lead the army. Moshe will go up on the mountaintop and daven. So what's the problem? Paragraph Dalet. Yachad imzos nechshav lahadavar leis atzlos. Mishum Shekasher midubar bahagana al bnei Yisrael mipnei akamim aleihem lo haya makom lechishuvim ulishikulim me'ein elu. So the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. He says that at the end of the day, when Klal Yisrael is in danger, we don't make assessments like this. When another Jew is in danger, we act first and think second. It's nice that Moshe Rabbeinu goes through this entire chachma, this entire idea. It's nice that Moshe Rabbeinu, again, has this whole well thought out framework. I'm over 60, I'm already too old, Yoshua will lead them out, I'll go on the top of the mountain. That's all wonderful. Moshe Rabbeinu, Klal Yisrael is being attacked. And when, bless you, when Klal Yisrael is being attacked, there's only one thing you do, which is you spring into action. You don't think, you just do. Elahaya al Moshe litztarif ba'atzmo lelochemim hayotzim l'sada ha'maracha. Moshe Rabbeinu should have joined the soldiers who went out to the battlefield. Ulistapek betfila kitzara sheyarach b'makom. Aye, what about the davening? What about the davening? So the Rebbe says, you know what? You could daven on your way to the battlefield. Right? You could daven on your way to war. Right? But ultimately, again, this was not the time for tefillah. This was not the time for mountaintops. Klal Yisrael is in danger. Moshe Rabbeinu, you go out to fight the war. So I think there are two incredible lessons that come out from the Rebbe. So obviously, the Rebbe's dramatic lesson, which is, and the Rebbe discusses this a lot of times in Sefer Bereishis, this idea that when you see another Jew in danger, when you see the klal in danger, in need, it's not a time for davening, and it's not a time for learning, it's a time for acting. Now, again, obviously we always daven, and we always learn for the benefit of klal Yisrael, but when you see the active ability to help out, you know where else the Rebbe says this? He says this, if you remember again, by the episode of Yosef. So remember again, when Yaakov sends Yosef out to Shechem to go check on his brothers, so Shimon and Levi see Yosef coming, they want to kill him. So what happens? Reuven intervenes, right? Reuven is the one who tries to save Yosef, and ultimately, again, allows Yosef to be thrown into the pit. Then something happens. Reuven leaves, the brothers are sitting around, and Yehuda says, why should we kill Yosef? Let's sell him. So they sell Yosef. Then what happens? Remember, what happens afterwards? What happens? Reuven comes back. And Reuven says, where's the boy? Where is the boy? So Rashi already comments. Rashi says, Reuven, where'd you go? Where did you go? So Rashi gives two interpretations. One of the interpretations is that Reuven was preoccupied with doing tshuva for the sin of having moved his father's bed. And the Rebbe says, you see an incredible lesson from here. When a Jew is in danger, when a Jew is in need, put your tshuva on the side and help your fellow Jew. Reuven's mistake, says the Rebbe, is that he thought that his tshuva was more important than actively saving his brother. Okay, Yosef is fine for now. He's in the pit. The brothers aren't going to kill him. Let me go do my tshuva. I'll come back to him. No, says the Rebbe. And you understand, by the way, that this was the Lubavitch Rebbe's, his life hashkafa. Everything is about devotion to the other. Everything is about service to the other. Service to the other, doing for the other, caring for the other, is the highest calling of the Jew. So Reuven, I understand you have to do tshuva for your mistake, for your sin. I understand. Not now. Not now. Now is not the time for your tshuva. Now, get your brother out of the pit and bring him back home. Moshe Rabbeinu, you have these incredible... Okay, I understand the cheshbonus. I understand it. You're 80 years old. You know that the ages for battle are 20 to 60. Send to the Yosha, Moshe, Amalek is attacking. The klal is in danger. Remember again, Amalek, who does Amalek attack? Amalek attacked the sick and the elderly from behind. They are attacking the most vulnerable. Sadish Baruch Hu says to Moshe, when the vulnerable are being attacked, you don't start making strategies. You put down your sefer, you put down your staff, you pick up the sword, and you go out to war. Moshe Rabbeinu, I understand the cheshbonos you made, but when there is another Jew in need, you react. When there's another Jew in need, you rise to the occasion. When there's another Jew in need, you roll up your sleeves and you figure out how you can help right now and don't make cheshbonas. But there's a deeper lesson that the Rebbe is teaching us, or I should say not a deeper lesson. a more global lesson. What the Rebbe is teaching us is, there are times to think, and there are times to act. What do I mean by that? Many people, I was just mentioning this in a Shiva home this evening. It's a Mishnah that I always like to quote by Shiva homes. It's a very profound Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Reb Shimon Gamliel said, he says, "Kol yomai gadalti bein hachachamim, all of my days I grew up amongst wise people." And he says a number of different things. And at the end of the Mishnah he says, "V'chol amarbe dvarim mevichit," which literally translates as what? The more you talk, right? Clinical tests have shown that the more you talk, the greater the statistical probability of you saying something that you're going to regret. It's a very important lesson, especially in our day and age where people love to tweet and blog and post and this and that with very little thought before they actually say something. And again, we see the deleterious effects of that each and every day. Each and every day. And so the Shimon Gamliel says, if you talk and you talk and you talk, maybe hate. You're going to bring sin upon yourself. The Baal Shem Tov has an amazing observation. He says, the Maharal also in his Parashat Pirkei Avos says it as well. He says, we often translate chet as sin. But the real etymological root of chet is really absence or a void, which makes sense. Not a void. The reason why that makes sense is because what is sin? What is sin? Sin is the absence of holiness. I could have been doing something good. I could have been generating positive energy. And instead I did something wrong. I caused a void of holiness in myself. So the Baal Shem Tov says something amazing. Kol amar bedvarim mevichit means what? He says there are some people who spend a lifetime talking about what they're going to do. And they talk, and they talk, and they talk. And there's the 2-year plan, and there's the 5-year plan, and there's the 7.5-year plan, and there's the 10-year plan, and I've got a PowerPoint presentation, and I bring color copies, and there's a chart, and there's a graph, and there's a this, and there's a that, and it's the perfect plan. Everything is great. Have it all thought out. Only one problem. Only one problem is I failed to execute. I failed to launch. The most beautiful plans, the most wonderful plans, it's just I never act. That's called a marbe dvarim. If you spend your life planning, but you never do, maybe chet. You live a life not of sin, but of absence, a void, of emptiness. There's a very fine line. Does it mean that a person should just act, again, without forethought, that a person should act without planning? Chas v'shalom, a person has to think ahead. But you know, there is this concept called analysis paralysis, where if a person just overthinks and overplans everything, remember, the one thing we learn, and unfortunately, most of us only learn this like a number of good decades into life, you can't really plan for most things. You can go ahead and make a general outline, you can make a general strategy, a general approach, because life never goes according. Even if you do plan, life rarely ever follows that plan. So therefore, again, what the Rebbe is teaching us is as follows. There's a time to plan, but there's also a time to act. Sometimes you just have to do. Sometimes in life, if you realize that there's something you need to accomplish, there's something you need to achieve, there's a finish line you need to cross, there's a piece of self-actualization that needs to occur. Planning will only get you so far. And planning could consume the entirety of one's time and resources. Sometimes the path to success is not paved with proper plans, but it's paved with quick and decisive action. But again, I want to be clear. It doesn't mean that planning shouldn't be done. And it doesn't mean that forethought is not an important piece. Of course it is. But sometimes we engage in that planning and we engage in that forethought to a fault. Did I say, you know what happened over here? Do you know what happened over here? Moshe Rabbeinu overthought this scenario. He overthought it. They come to Moshe. Amalek is attacking us. Amalek is attacking us. Right? Amalek is attacking us. And they're attacking the most vulnerable. What does Moshe say? Yoshua, gather the army. Let's go out tomorrow. Tomorrow? Why not today? Well, we got to get the army ready. We got to give them instructions. We got to give a strategy, a this, that. There's plenty of good reasons why you have to go tomorrow. Yoshua, this is you. Why is assume? Well, I'm above the age of 80. You only go out to the army until you're 60. I'm going to go up on the top of the mountain. I'll inspire the people. All correct ideas. All correct ideas. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. Everything he does is absolutely unequivocally correct. But at the end, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted here was not a plan. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted here was dynamic, decisive activity. What the Ribbono Shel Olam is teaching us is that sometimes in life, you just have to get up and do. You have to stop talking. You have to stop planning. You have to stop imagining. You have to stop dreaming. You have to stop wanting. You have to stop pining. You have to stop all the different things. And you just have to roll up your sleeves and do. You just have to make it happen. It's not going to be perfect. Welcome to life. Most things are not perfect, right? Most scenarios are not perfect because people aren't perfect, because the world is not perfect. The Ribbono Shel Olam is perfect. But that's it. There's no other perfection. Don't spend life planning. Don't spend life with cheshbonos. Spend life doing. There's a time to plan, but more importantly, there's a time to act. And I'll show you something amazing. And with this, we'll conclude. The Ma'ar V'Shemesh number 14 says something quite beautiful. He says, V'zeh v'yidei Moshe Kvedim. So the Ma'ar V'Shemesh, you can see over Eklonimus Kalman Alevi Epstein. The Ma'ar V'Shemesh, by the way, is the grandfather of the Piagetzna, the great-grandfather, the Piagetzna, Rav Eklonimus Kalman Shapira, the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto, who wrote Ish Kodesh. He's named for his Zayda, the Ma'ar V'Shemesh, Rav Eklonimus Kalman. So listen to what the Ma'ar V'Shemesh says, and a dramatically different interpretation. V'idei Moshe Kvedim, Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were heavy. What does that mean? Lomar, get ready for this. Kocho shel Moshe haya kaved alav. You see, everyone's interpreting Moshe Rabbeinu's hands as being heavy, weighed down, really as we saw a physical manifestation of a little bit of a laid-back, lackadaisical approach. The Ma'ar V'Shemesh says, no. V'idei Moshe kved means Moshe Rabbeinu's arms were weighed down with strength and potential. Moshe Rabbeinu had the ability to lead the army out into war. Moshe Rabbeinu had the ability to vanquish Amalek. Moshe Rabbeinu had the ability to get the job done. His arms were weighed down with so much potential. Weighed down meaning filled with. His arms were filled with so much dynamic ability, but he didn't use it. He didn't use it. Or at least I should say, he didn't use it here. Instead, again, he decides, Yoshua, you take the army out, I will take the you take the physical front, I'll take the spiritual front. Moshe Rabbeinu thought that he wasn't capable. Moshe Rabbeinu thought that he wasn't able. Moshe Rabbeinu feels the need to outsource because he feels that this is just something that is beyond him. And what does the Torah Kedosha say? V'yidei Moshe Kvedim. Moshe, you don't even realize how filled with potential you are. You don't even realize how filled with koach you are. Your arms are weighed down. Your arms are made heavy by all of the incredible strength you possess. All you need to do is act. All you need to do is do. And this becomes the incredible, ongoing, and eternal lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to teach us here. It's important to plan, and it's important to have frameworks, and it's important to think ahead, but it's equally as important to realize that there is a fine line between planning and between atzlus and hisrashlus. At a certain point in time, the planning and the cheshbonos become counterproductive. At a certain point in time, too much planning makes me just into a talker, an empty talker. There's a time to plan. There's a time to think. There's a time for cheshbonos. But we also have to know when that incredible moment of action comes upon us. We also have to recognize when it's time to do. We have to recognize that, like Moshe Rabbeinu, each of us are Yidei Moshe. You could just fill in your name here. Yidei, fill in your name, Kvedim. Each of our arms are filled with so much koach, filled with so much potential, filled with so much ability. And may HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us the strength, Emir Hashem, not to plan what to do with that koach and ability, but Emir Hashem, give us the strength to act, give us the strength to do. Okay, we'll stop over here.